You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
In dreams he came.
A very nice little drum beat, wasn't it?
That was.
That. Oh, no, I like that.
Just to introduce the whole crew today. Now, who's with us? It's David J. Howard's in the studio.
Yeah. We have me, No More Mr. Nice Guy, David.
Yes, with myself, Sam Stone.
No More Miss Nice Guy.
Absolutely. And on the phone, Robin Pierce. And that was, of course, No More Mr. Nice Guy, Alice Cooper. Robin's favourite song. Am I right
Absolutely.
There, Robin?
Absolutely. My favourite song. My favourite recording artist, seen him in concert 4 times. Oh. It was so hard for me not to sing along there, but I'm never sure whether Alex has actually got me live or not.
At that point, I think you were safe.
Yes. Yeah, but we are streaming live from your video camera in your computer, Robin, so smile for the camera, please.
Hang on a second. I just put my pants on.
And the air guitar was very fun.
The air guitar was brilliant there as well. Excellent.
And joining us very shortly will be Patricia H. Ash and Joshua Lou Friedman, who we haven't had on the show for quite a while, so it'd be good to talk to Josh again. Mm-hmm. Robin, this month you're going to do a little bit of a cameo. You're going to be George Mann, aren't you?
Cameo. I'm going to be George Mann.
Yes.
I wish I had his IQ.
And you're going to do In This Month.
In This Month. Now then, 1917. The First World War, dire times indeed. The British devastated the German defence in the Battle of Rudstein, which prompted a crisis among the German commanders and caused a severe loss of morale in the German Fourth Army. That was 101 years ago.
Oh, good it doesn't Lord. Feel so long ago, does it? Wow.
Well, I don't know. Even I don't remember that one.
No. And I've never heard of the Battle of Brutzeint.
Brutzeint, is it? Brutzeint?
No, Brutzeint. Yeah. I checked the pronunciation before I came on air.
Wow.
And in fact, actually, it is the 100-year anniversary in November of the end of the First World War.
That is correct,
Wow.
I'm loving the Time Machine music in the back because I bought that soundtrack CD yesterday.
Yeah, cool.
Alex is smiling.
1939, still on war, I'm afraid, but a different one, 79 years ago. 1st of October 1939, Winston Churchill gave his first wartime broadcast.
Wow.
It wasn't the one that everybody remembered.
We shall fight them on the beaches, we shall fight them in the air.
That was made the following year, in I think about June of 1940, for the first wartime broadcast. And now for something completely different.
Okay.
1969, 5th of October. First airing of, I give you a clue. Spoon feeding you this, guys?
That's 49 years ago.
Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Good grief, is that really 49 years?
Yeah,
49 years ago.
So next year will be a 50th for them. 50th. I wonder if they're going to do anything interesting.
What was interesting, as I heard this on the radio actually the other day, that they were talking to Michael Palin. And he was saying that, yes, next year is the 50th. But it wouldn't be a very Python thing to actually celebrate the 50th. So he was saying maybe we should just celebrate the 53rd randomly instead.
We should have celebrated this year. The 49th would have been fun as well.
Yes.
They have found some manuscripts from either the Holy Grail or Life of Brian, which are going on public display, aren't they?
I've heard that.
Sketches that have never been seen or heard or broadcast.
That is a very silly film.
He's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty
boy. Very naughty boy.
Okay, stop it. This is getting far too silly.
1975, 43 years ago.
Is that 43 years ago? 75. Oh, dear.
Yes.
I know, I'm feeling my age now.
Oh, dear.
Poldark was first seen on the air.
Poldark. And they've now redone the series,
Come
of course.
Come on, who played Poldark in that
it was Robin
series?
I knew his first name, but I can't remember what his surname was. It's not Pierce.
It's not Robin Pierce. It is Robin.
It's
not Nedwell. No.
Thanks.
Wasn't Anushka Hempel, but she was in it.
Was Anushka Hempel in it?
Mm-hmm.
She was in it.
He's actually playing a judge in the new series as well. Robin. The guy who was the original Poldark.
Okay.
And he's very good in it.
Maybe our listener can tell us next week when we get transmitted.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yes. We won't be able to respond, though.
We wouldn't.
And of course, this month, in the role of our listener, should be George Mann.
It should be, indeed it should.
Absolutely.
Those are fascinating,
I have
Robin.
One more for you.
Oh, good. Because
our theme this month, I believe, is urban legends.
It is.
Yes, it is.
Any idea what was first broadcast 24 years ago on the 19th of September, 1994.
First broadcast, 19th of September,
1994.
Was that Ghost Watch?
No, it wasn't. It was...
Good guess.
The X-Files.
Oh, gosh.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, wow.
Wow.
We've just realised
who pulled out the
original...
It wasn't Anushka Hempel, it was Angar Adler-Reese.
Yes, it was Angar Adler-Reese. That's right.
Who was Robin?
It was Robin Ellis.
Robin Ellis.
That's right.
Yes.
But going back to the X-Files, wow, can we imagine that so long ago? It doesn't feel that long ago,
does it? The truth is still out there.
Yeah.
Yes, it was never quite found, was it?
It was never quite found.
Never quite found, that's true.
Never quite found.
Oh, well, thank you for that, Robin.
I love that show.
So we'll go rapidly on to your review section.
So why are we talking about urban legends? What is it about urban legends?
I think they are fascinating because they are the sort of things... I mean, we were talking on the midweek midweek drive and listening to the midweek drive driving in, actually. And
nice plug, Sam. Appreciate that for the team.
Well, Alex was actually talking a lot about goosebump moments, and I think actually Urban Legends really does come in, you know, mix in very well with that, because there are certain stories that we hear that resonate with us. And culturally, some of those stories are very, very similar all over the world. You might have a very similar, like you've always got the girl who was hitchhiking and they, you know, somebody stops and picks her up. And then when he reaches the place, she says she's going to, she needs to go. Suddenly he turns around and she's gone. And then there's the mysterious evidence left behind where it takes the guy to the house of the girl and then he finds out she's dead.
Yes.
So that one is a story that is often told in very different ways over and over again and in different cultures.
It's fascinating.
And I think that urban legends are interesting. I think actually that brings us back to you, doesn't it, Robin, and your review?
That's right. I've been to see The Slender Man. Now, I've mentioned The Slender Man on a previous show that we did because there was a very well-received documentary about it and how it all got started. Now, long story short, Slender Man is a fictional character, and he's created by an internet forum user by the name of Eric Knudsen. Now, in a series of memes. Now, long story short, the character and his backstory was expanded upon by other web users, bringing part of internet mythology, and it's sort of translated to being an urban legend, even though it's entirely fictional. And the thing that's really famous about the Slender Man is that kids bought into this, American high school kids, and they try to summon him, and two girls actually try to viciously murder a third girl who was part of their group to try and sacrifice her to the Slender Man in a famous court case that was about 4 years ago.
I do remember that, Robin.
Right. And he was blamed, you know, the Slender Man was blamed by the perpetrators, you know, for his influence in that. And their defense was that they wanted to offer their friend as a sacrifice to appease Slender Man and become his proxies. Now, with a story like that, it's only going to be a matter of time before Hollywood, who have no regard to taste or sensitivity, would try and adapt this character to a movie, which they have done. Not very successfully, to be honest with you. For the purposes of the film, I mean, Slender Man is real, and he's summoned ill-advisedly by three teenage high school girls. Their boyfriends were going to summon him, but they backed out. So bored one evening, the girls do it via the internet. And I thought it was a nice kind of plot point that they managed to find a website, presumably on the dark web, where, you know, to summon Slender Man, click here, which they do.
Yes, because that's what you find everywhere on the dark web.
Exactly. Yes. And the Slender Man will come when three bells toll.
Right.
And, you know, I'm having problems coming to terms with the fact that you can summon a supernatural entity by clicking on a link that reads, you know, summon him. Anyway, having attracted his attention, most of the film then is spent trying to basically get rid of him. And they try and fob him off with small little sacrifices, but the terrorizing carries on. So they try and sacrifice more and more, but he wants the actual ultimate sacrifice. He wants them. And, you know, that's the whole thing right there. It's got a nice twist ending, which I liked, which I will not spoil here. And the twist ending actually raises my overall opinion of this disappointing little film. But other than that, it doesn't have much to recommend it. It borrows quite liberally from Candyman, Freddy Krueger, Urban Legend, and almost unforgivably, Evil Dead.
Oh. Wow. Right.
There is a scene where it's so dimly lit where he appears to turn into a malevolent tree.
Oh, dear.
So, you know, he's obviously branching out into new areas here.
Absolutely, yes.
I saw what he did there.
David did.
I expect his bark was worse than his bite.
Oh, I can't believe you said that.
Yeah. You went there, David. Had to go there.
Well, yeah, it's me. It's what we do.
Fender Man himself is wisely kept out of sight other than long shots and sudden close-ups of his pasty white blank face. Mm-hmm. But, you know, really, I'm hoping that they don't make a sequel. Mm. Because it really doesn't deserve one.
So it doesn't seem to have the immediacy of a Freddy Krueger or a Michael Myers or one of those great kind of movie monster kind of.
There's build up, but then they blow it by the scare being a sudden blast of noise.
I hate it. A cat screeching or something. Yes.
I don't like being booed in real life. And when somebody does it over and over and over in a film, I want to punch the director.
Yes.
Yes.
I watched a classic film called The Changeling last night.
Which yes.
Really good.
Yes.
Haunted house film.
George C.
Scott. I was thinking, you know, this is how you make people feel uneasy.
Yes.
That's right.
How you do it. Not with a sudden boo or a sudden poke in the ribs when you can't be seen. It's got to be a gradual build-up and then a release, not the conjuring school of scaring. Mm.
Interestingly, yeah. I saw a short on Slender Man. I think it was on Netflix, or it might have been on Prime, actually. I think it was probably Prime, and other downstreaming companies do exist, of course. But there is something like that. I'm sure it was Slender Man, but it was a short.
Mm. Yeah.
And I thought that was absolute garbage as well, actually. I was very blunt there, wasn't I?
I had such high expectations, and one by one, they were dashed. I saw this as part of possibly the most unlikely double bill I've done. The other film was Christopher Robin, and Christopher Robin was a far better film.
Oh,
right.
Interesting. That is a very unlikely double bill.
Yes. Did the trees in the Thousand Acre Wood come alive and try and eat Christopher?
Indeed.
Yes.
Oh dear. Oh well. So what are you going to give this out of 10 then, Robin?
I'll give it. Oh, out of 10, I would give it a 5 for 3. Effort.
Two.
Effort. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm feeling kind. I've had my dinner.
Okay.
I'm feeling kind. I'm feeling mellow.
Excellent.
Well, thank you so much, Robin.
You are most welcome.
And thanks for being on the show again.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Speak to you soon.
Slewing and horse relays his messages by.
And that was Procol Harum, Pandora's Box.
Fabulous tune.
Yeah, great.
I love that tune.
And that was David's favourite choice this time. And we're welcoming Patricia H. Ash on the show. Hi, Patricia. How are you?
Hi, I'm pretty good. How are you?
Good. How is the weather in Texas at the moment?
Rainy. I think we have your weather.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
We've been having pretty good weather here the last few days, and now we've suddenly got autumn.
Yeah, the steers are coming quite nicely in the garden these days, and the grass has turned to a dust bowl. So
it has indeed. Yes. It has indeed. So today you're joining us to talk about a podcast, I believe.
Yes. Yes. It's called Mysteries and Urban Legends.
Wow. And that's very appropriate to our discussions today.
How strange that you should choose that one, Patricia. Mm.
Da-da-da.
It's almost as if this was planned.
There's a mystery afoot.
So, tell us all about it.
Tell us about, what was it called? Strange?
It's called Mysteries and Urban Legends. MAUL for short. M-A-U-L. Like what a bear would do to you.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah. And it covers all sorts of things. It's an Australian couple, and it's a fairly short podcast, usually 20 to 30 minutes long. So you get a nice taster of whatever they're doing. And they do, one of them does mysteries, so like true crime things, people who have disappeared or things that have disappeared or things which may never have existed in the first place. They did an episode on Captain Kidd's treasure. And that's the husband, and the wife does urban legends. She does urban legends. We've had... the elevator game, which came from Korea. We've had I think the ghostly hitchhiker, which is so my personal favorite urban legend.
Explain who the elevator dame is.
It got a lot of attention because of a disappearance from Los Angeles. There was security camera footage of this person acting really weird before she disappeared and then was found a month later in the water tank of the hotel. Oh. It was really gross. Some people looked at the security camera footage and said, you know, she might have been playing the elevator game, which is weird. You go into an elevator, you push a bunch of buttons, and there's all of these rules that you have to do. And if you do it right, supposedly you get to an alternative universe.
Oh, interesting.
Right. Wow. I think I remember that story, actually.
Or you get to floor 13.
I think I've seen the video as well of her acting very strangely and almost as though there's something outside the elevator when the doors open, or she's talking to something, but there's nothing visible on the camera or anything. It's all very strange.
Right. And you're not supposed to talk to the person when you're playing the elevator game. A woman is supposed to get on the elevator and talk to you, and you're not supposed to talk to her.
Ah.
So maybe Elisa did, and that's what happened to her. Mm. Maybe.
So does the podcast kind of draw conclusions at all, or is it just sort of reporting and...
Sometimes there are no conclusions to draw. The conclusion is, well, that's weird, especially in the mysteries. It's like, well, that person disappeared, or that's a thing that might exist, or that's a thing that's happening and we're not sure why. There's a bridge in Scotland where dogs will just jump off of it.
Wow.
Oh.
Some dogs jump off of it several times. No one knows why.
And what's under the bridge? Do they jump off into water?
I don't know if it's one that's over water or over like a pedestrian walkway or something.
It's probably an old Indian graveyard, and they're after the bones.
It's in Scotland.
It's in Scotland.
Well,
the old Gaelic one.
Old Gaelic graveyard. There,
but
don't they?
Okay, maybe right. That could be it. So there's all kinds of mysteries, all kinds of urban legends from everywhere.
Oh, wow. So they kind of collect them, do they?
They do. They collect them, and then they talk about them, and they give you some ideas of where they found the information that they found, so you can go and look at it, because there's always more information. It's not my favorite podcast, because I like more than just a little taste of these mysteries.
Right.
I mean, sometimes there's not much more than a little taste, but when you can sort of really dig into it, that's what I like. It's a little bit too short for me, but it is a very good podcast.
Did you ever hear any urban legends on there that you've never heard before?
Yes. Yes, most recently, the, oh gosh, what is it called? The Yuki Onna, which is from Japan, and it's a woman or being who sort of appears when it's snowing, and sometimes she means you harm, sometimes she means you good, sometimes people marry her, and then when the spring comes, she kind of melts. It's a really old legend, but it's there. These creatures are still spotted from time to time in some places. So, is it really a legend?
That's a good
or
question,
is there something
isn't it?
Fascinating
there?
Question. Good question.
Fascinating.
So, how can people find this podcast, Patricia?
Just anywhere you can find other podcasts. It's on iTunes. I think it's on Spotify.
Right.
It's on, what is the Google Podcasts or something like that.
So M-A-U-L.
They're on Facebook.
Yes, Maul, basically.
Yes.
Mm.
Yep.
is one of the best films I've ever seen.
Absolutely, just bang, 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 all the way through.
You know, all I want to do now is watch that.
Spoiler, the show which reviews movies, books and TV shows in their entirety. Twists, endings and all.
I don't think it's a bad ending at all, no.
Without fear of spoilers.
Thank you, just happy it ended.
Each show is dedicated to just one subject, so we can delve deeper behind the screen or the page.
It might be the geekiest book ever written.
This producer who's made up new lies.
That was also a joke. How can I get out of this sentence?
Join me, Paul Tyler, with Andy Goulding.
Sorry, I've got quite angry about that.
And Rachel Burnett.
I love the jiggly bottoms of the lady.
Alternate Thursdays at 10 p.m. repeated on Saturdays at 11 p.m. It's fun for all the family, right?
Siren 107.3 FM.
Hi, this is Chase Masterson, founder of the Pop Culture Hero Coalition, the first ever organization to make a stand against bullying, racism, misogyny, LGBT bullying, cyberbullying, and other forms of hate using pop culture stories that we love. We all love superheroes. Why not be one? Check out our website at www.popcultureherocoalition.org. Follow us on Facebook at Pop Culture Hero Coalition and on Twitter at Superhero IRL. Thanks so much.
And back introing Human League with Mirrorman. Well, great song. Great. I love that one.
Good stuff.
And quite appropriate, really, because we are talking today about urban legends, which brings me to one of the movies that I've been meaning to watch for a long, long time. And that Mirrorman, I'm sure, was a little bit of a tip to the hat for that one. And it's Candyman. Patricia, have you seen Candyman?
I haven't.
David, have you seen Candyman?
Do you know, I actually don't think I have.
It's, well, that's all
not,
of us.
It's not one that I've seen. Well, that's that discussion.
What about you, Alex? Have you seen Candyman?
It's back in the day, but, you know, I'm just the silent producer. Yeah. So.
But we have met Tony Todd, who played Candyman. So.
He's very tall.
He's very big. So we're talking about urban legends here and everything. And we've got like a couple little breaks here with a bit of music in the middle. Just to sort of chat about some of our favourite urban legends and maybe about how urban legends come to pass and all of that kind of thing. So just, Sam, what do you have a particular favourite little creepy story that may or may not be true?
Well, I was thinking again about the hitchhiking one, which everybody knows about. But there's so many. It's hard to just pick an actual favourite. What about you, David? Have you got a favourite one?
Well, I do have a favourite. There's quite a few around. And, of course, I think the thing with urban legends is generally you don't know where they came from. So I don't know if you've heard this one, Patricia. Maybe the podcast mentioned it. So basically the story, it's a married couple living in their house, and a husband and wife. And the wife is doing the washing up or something and sees her husband sort of go out. He says, bye, see you later. He goes out into the garden. She looks up, sees him through the window in the garden, and then goes washing up. Next time she looks up, he's gone. He's not there. So she thinks nothing of it, but he doesn't appear. He doesn't come back. She goes to look for him. He can't find him. He's just vanished. He's just absolutely gone. No idea where he's gone. So the next day, still hasn't turned up. Doesn't know where he is. Goes in the garden and sees that there's a strange circle of grass which seems to be dying off in the garden, and she doesn't know why. Round about where she saw him when she looked out the window, and she doesn't really know why. And then as the year progresses, this grass basically dies off. It never recovers, and there's the circle of bald earth in the garden. And what she finds is that every time she goes near it, fainter and fainter and fainter, she can just hear her husband crying no, 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 no every time she goes near it. And they never find him.
Creepy.
Oh, no.
So that's probably my favourite one. And I've never seen that one done as a film or anything. And I don't know where it came from. I don't know where I heard it. Because that's the gist, though, isn't it, of an urban legend. It's always... Yeah. My brother's friend's cousin's uncle.
Yeah, that's right.
This happened to them.
That's right.
And it always happened to somebody. This happened to them. But it never happens to you.
And the guy that worked down the chip shop that swears he's Elvis. No, hang on. That's something else
entirely.
That's a song,
I think you'll find.
Patricia, have you got any favourite urban legends or maybe even local ones to yourself?
I would have to say that my favourite urban legend is either the Vanishing Hitchhiker.
Yes.
Or the alligators in the sewers.
Oh.
Alligators in the zoo,
of course. Yes. And of course, there are some there's some great ones like the Death Walls, where that I was researching a while back for a project I was working on, that where it, a young girl and boy fall in love, and he has to go away to war. And while he's away, he gets killed and she marries somebody else. And he appears on her wedding day and dances with her, and everybody dies. So it's kind of a
very cheerful.
Very cheerful wedding, that one.
Very cheerful.
So that's...
But I do wonder where these things come from, though. And I think the internet is a great source of these kind of... the gems of them. I mean, there's a... I remember a couple of years ago now, there was a web page. I think it's still available. Something to do with gas experimentation that the Russians or the Germans were doing during the Second World War, where they locked a load of civilians into a bunker with an experimental gas to see what would happen. And then basically they found the tapes that were left behind.
That's right.
Of these people talking to these things, these entities, seeing things, you know, and what happened when they eventually opened it after like 2 months or something to let these people out again. It's really, really horrific. And again, very well written. And one kind of assumes it might be fiction, but you're not quite sure because it's presented as if it's...
I had heard of that one. It has been presented as fact, but I suspect it is a bit more of a Blair Witch situation.
Yes.
Because
Blair Witch is another great urban legend film, of course, isn't it? With the stick figures in the forest, and
I've never actually watched it because I don't like shaky cam.
No, me too.
So I would like to have watched it because there was such a fuss made about Blair Witch, but I just couldn't cope with it because it was just too all over the place. I'm not into that kind of film anyway.
But I think most places seem to have some sort of a story. About, you know, I don't know, don't go down that alleyway beside the chip shop at night because that's where Georgia was killed, you know, 50 years ago, you know, but and they never caught her killer.
Well, this
kind
also,
of thing.
Yeah,
and this sort of story you get, these local stories. You must have a load from Manchester.
Well, there was an urban legend when I was growing up that if you, on Midsummer Night's Eve, if you looked in a mirror and you had a candle either side of you, and you, you know, thought about the future, you would see the face of your future husband over your shoulder.
Oh.
Have you ever heard that one, Patricia?
I have. And I heard someone say that perhaps that's where the Bloody Mary urban legend got started.
Right. I was wondering that as well.
The Bloody Mary one. Yes.
So interesting, isn't
it? And there's been some cracking... Alex, hello.
No, I just got an indication that time was that.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought you had an urban legend.
But, well, actually, in terms of urban legends, nobody has actually talked about a certain fried rat that you actually find within a fast food establishment.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yes. There's always a fried rat.
Body parts.
It's somebody's burger store.
Or whatever. Yeah, that's a good one, Alex. That is a good one. Oh, wow. Shall we come back and talk about this some more?
We well, I don't think we've got time. I think we'll have to say goodbye to Patricia now and move on and
talk some more with Josh.
Yeah, Josh. But we'll speak to you next month, Patricia.
Speak to you next month.
Now I'm all smart.
Well, that was
what?
Wow, that was a bit of a goosebump moment. I think that was Wind Up Toy.
Song. I think it's a very creepy song, appropriate for the Stone Tapes.
Absolutely, and welcome to Joshua Lou Friedman. And I think we need to give a round of applause. Put you back on the show. Oh, it's so nice to have you back.
Good to be back. Yes, thank you for having me.
So we're talking urban legends, Josh, and apart from being one yourself. Do you have a favorite urban legend?
It's funny you have questions for me. I have questions for you. I guess you guys reviewed the Slender Man. I almost went and saw it.
Yes,
we
just
did.
Quickly,
yeah.
Was it yay or no? Yes, quickly.
Well, we didn't get to see it, but Robin said it gave it 5 out of 10. He thought it was very disappointing.
Okay. Because I want to dig into the urban legend aspect of the show. So yeah. I want to see it, so I guess I will. But it's good to talk to you guys who are digging into basic urban legends.
All sorts, Josh. All sorts. I mean, are there any sort of particular to LA or America or something, which perhaps you know are particular to that country?
Well, I'll be honest with you. Of course, there are many, and I've done my research before. You know, coming on, and you know, I'm not a big fan of the films in the '90s you know, really dug into urban legends. Like, you know, I Know What You Did This Urban Legend for Bloody Mary.
Yeah. We didn't mention those. You know? I Know What You Did Last Summer. Honestly, I still know what you did last summer. And
we have now, though.
Yeah. I kind of skip over that. That's not my style. But as far as, you know, American urban legends films go, and Candyman is obviously one of the number ones with the bullet.
Yeah.
You know, you can't forget his, you know, Tony Todd's performance in Cabrini Greens. That's a... You know, but what I'm trying to say is that the American urban legend movies that I think are very, seminal are, and let's face it, Blair Witch nailed it. Yeah. Blair Witch did it. It started it. It nailed it with a bullet with that first film, and it became a cultural phenomenon. But there's other ones that you don't quite realize that have been seeping under the surface. There's always the American urban legend of the hitchhiker you don't pick up.
Yes.
So anyone who's seen Rutger Hauer's performance in The Hitcher will consider that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We'll consider that a very
terrifying performance, actually.
Film.
Terrifying.
Exactly. Mm. And also, there's another one from the 70s. It's been remade and readapted, but I don't think it didn't have the impact of the original, is the urban legend of the babysitter who has a phone calls coming in from within the house.
Yeah, don't answer that.
And that's when the stranger calls.
Yeah.
With a great British actor named Tony Beckley, who, for Doctor Who fans know who he is, but Tony Beckley really nailed that performance. And that's another like The Hitcher and When a Stranger Calls, the original, they've both been remade. That's the power of the urban legend.
Wow.
But the originals are the best. So yeah, American-wise, yes.
And to answer your question. These are all very sort of classic kind of things. I mean, on the list here that Sam's prepared, interestingly enough, she's put It Follows. And I thought to myself, do you know, that's actually a new take on something.
I'll give you that. I have mixed feelings about that film.
Yeah, but as a concept, as the basic idea that you can kind of grant someone a curse that, you know, someone who no one else can see is just very slowly going to follow you, and what will happen when they catch up with you is just terrifying kind of thing. I completely agree,
and it had a great score.
Yeah, absolutely. Disaster piece, was it?
It definitely made an impact in the horror circles. Mm.
Yes,
but my question about that is, it wasn't actually an urban legend. It created its own urban legend.
But we need new
urban legends, because, you know, otherwise you get into an endless stream of just remakes of ideas. And if you can come up with something new that feels genuine, I mean, I've always said this about Graham Masterton's writing, that he writes about legends and myths and things in a way
Manitou
that makes you feel that they have always existed, and this is exactly what he's describing, when he actually just made the entire thing up himself. And that requires a particular talent to do that. I think...
Well, when it comes to Graham Masterson or even Richard Matheson,
of course.
Exactly. Or Robert Bloch, or any of these great short story writers. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, Clive Barker came up with his Thief of Always, which is a beautiful kind of parable. And Neil Gaiman did Coraline. Again, new ideas and new takes on sort of creepy things that you think might just be happening. You know, being taken by a family who've had their eyes replaced with buttons is kind of quite scary as a concept.
And it stays with you.
I like that. And I think there's room for that in film as well. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah.
Oh, I agree completely. And I think actually in one of our pre-discussions for the show, the fact that we do actually need to keep looking at new stuff that has this feeling of terror or even creates its own legends like It Follows, which absolutely I was thinking exactly the same thing, which is why I put it there, Josh, that we would discuss it, because I think it was unique in that way. But it reminded me also of the vibe of The Ring. And you know,
The Ring is a great urban legend.
It definitely brings international horror into the spotlight, and those are great as well. But I mean, we're replete with urban legends. Again, here's the thing. I feel like I have a blind spot. Like, I wish I could talk about I Know What You Did Last, Urban Legend, Last Bloody Mary, Summer, Final Cut, whatever they all are.
Yeah.
Yes.
I kind of, like, just put that out of it because I like good horror. And that's all cookie cutter horror, sorry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where you just kind of, like, you know, you're just going through the motions. And even though they're all based, even the urban legend franchise is based on a franchise called Urban Legends, I give it no credence, if that makes sense. You know, I mean, the good old horror ones, even The Burning from 1981.
Yes.
I mean, that's a solid horror film.
It is. It's
based
on urban legends.
You know what I mean?
It's a good one.
I do. Yeah. And I think on that note, we're going to pop over and listen to a bit of Timbaland and Nelly Furtado and Morning After Dark.
And I can't believe you put this on the list. It's one of my favorite songs.
I love this. Stay with us, Josh. We've got more to talk about. Going to listen into the that song in the background.
In the background, yes.
Well, we return to David's film of the month.
Because we're going to have a very quick look at our film of the month this month, which is a film called The Lodgers, which I believe you mentioned as well to us, Josh.
Well, Well, I mentioned it, actually, because it was me that I'd seen it while David was away last week, and I thought, that's a great, great film.
Now,
I
what's interesting
it.
Is I didn't actually really like it. I thought it was a bit tame. It was slow. I found the explanations obtuse. Sam had to explain it to me.
I explained it to him on the way here.
Often
he didn't get it.
To, doesn't often happen.
I got it.
I just didn't quite get it. And I thought, okay.
It's the incest element.
Yeah, the incest element doesn't bother me. I'm not bothered about that.
Didn't quite get it, though.
I mean, I liked the idea of a house with a creepy basement full of water, that where there's things in the water that are going to come and get you if you don't do certain things. I kind of quite like that. But then the rationale behind it, that there was like twins kind of getting off with each other and having more twins that get off with each other and they all go and drown themselves. And I'm like...
But there was also a whole tip to the hat to some Argento there, wasn't there?
There was definitely a tip to the hat to Inferno and the beautiful underwater sequence.
I felt a little bit of Fall of Usher.
Yeah, the house is very well done. The house is very creepy. I liked a lot of bits of it. I just felt as a whole film, it was slightly disappointing. I'm sorry.
What was your thoughts, Josh?
I'm going to go ahead and say there's two things that have me, I'm a little biased. First of all, I had to go to a screening of The Nun.
Yes.
This new horror film coming out.
Yeah.
Which was in the Conjuring universe.
Right.
And I haven't really watched the Conjuring film because I'm a busy man. So what I had to do before I watched The Lodgers was to watch The Conjuring 2, Annabelle Creation, and get ready to go to this thing. And so I was like, in my head, I was like, oh my God, I'm doing all these haunted house films with big production values, and they were all pretty good. I just kind of longed for something slower. A slow burn is what you call it.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, not only did I want a movie with a slow burn, I loved the cinematography, and I embraced a slow burn. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was awesome.
And I thought it delivered if you slow burned it to the end.
Right.
So,
cool.
And here's a second bias. I'm sorry, guys. The second bias I had going to this film, it's done by Epic Pictures, our big-ass
I spotted it was Epic. I spotted it was Epic.
I didn't.
You saw Epic, and you saw these are my people who produced it.
Yeah.
So I can't, really bag on it, but I don't want to bag on it because it was a slow burn after watching all these big-budget, seen Conjuring 2, Annabelle Creation.
Yeah. I have to
I
say,
needed
Josh,
something slower.
I get what you're saying because I love a slow burn as well. It's one of the things that's very different about David and I. And I'm afraid that's all we've got time for.
I love a slow burn.
But what an awesome conversation. Thank you so much. Thanks so much to Joshua Lou Friedman.
Yeah.
And David J. Howe.
Thank you.
Patricia H. Ash, hello. Robin Pierce, they can't say goodbye. And of course, our producer, Alex Lefchuk. Goodbye. We'll see you next month.
Say goodbye, Josh.
Bye.
All right. I hope I contributed enough. Thank you. Bye. My mind.